Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up. A new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. We gotta change it, yeah. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me.
Joining Missing Pages of History today, Saturday, May the 28th, 2018, 1 p.m. Today we're going to be discussing the theme, the cloud of racism. Yes, the theme today is the cloud of racism. Like always, our program is geared towards addressing and serving the underserved communities. We encourage your participation by calling in at 818-337-0016. Or you can go online and listen to the program. If you are to call in, please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. Like always, we would like to welcome our member, our historian, our analyst, Emmanuel. We'd like to welcome you back to this program. We miss you the last episode. Welcome back, Emmanuel. How you doing?
A little bit better.
I know our listening audience miss you. They're glad to have you back. We're glad that you're doing better. Well, you know, Emmanuel, we got some real interesting topics today that we'd like to get your perspective on. And for the first half of the program, we're going to discuss some of these topics. And then it will be followed by a continuation of the segment, Today's Capitalism Was Born in Slavery. So to our listening audience, this will be our agenda for today. Again, we thank you for supporting us. And we're going to get started right now with this program. Emmanuel, this past week, from the National Football League, there was a new policy developed as relates to the national anthem. Can you discuss the new policy and its ramification, not only on the football players, but what it says to the everyday society, Emmanuel.
Well, from my understanding, our new policy came out by the owners. Has not been discussed by the collective bargaining unit, which they have to do that also, have to go run it by them. The new policy has its pros and cons. To me, we're talking about affecting the bottom line, the profiteering, the fan base, attitudes, even from the president. He put his 2 cents worth in, which is not worth the 2 cents. We thought about behavior. It's all about protesting. It's all about hijacking the truth and making it a lie or make it stand for something else. The protest by Kaepernick talking about justices, injustice basically. We're talking about police brutality. We're talking about inequality. And this is a platform they used to do this. You know, you're employed by someone else. But again, that's one of your larger platforms. Policy bases say that you have to stand when a national anthem is being played. They said, if you don't do that, you're disrespecting the flag. This is not about the flag. Not about the military. This is nothing about being disrespectful. We're talking about inequality. We're talking about justice. We're talking about injustices. We're talking about police brutality. But again, how we twist things to fit and reframe it to fit our agenda. The owners agreed that, majority of them did, you either stay in the locker room if you're not going to stand. If you come outside the locker room or take the field, you have to stand. You cannot kneel. Now, those two things basically came out of that. They didn't say you couldn't raise your fist up, cross your arms, put your hand on your heart. Things you have to do. There's no symbols that you can do other than you got to come out and stand. I think Notre Dame, some more teams, they don't come out the locker room until it's been played to take that stand. All sported events, you don't have to stand. I'm going to give you an example. If you at the concession stand and they're playing the national anthem, I don't think nobody's standing. They're getting their beer, they're getting their popcorn and their hot dogs. What happens here? So, again, they're talking about the uniformed players. 70% of the players are African-American players. A little more than 70%. 90% plays, but 70% are on the team. But 90% is on the field at all given times. Defense, on offense, whatever. When you look at this, can you really do the protest? What's going on here? There's another way of doing it that has made the same type of heavy platform and get recognition? Probably so. It's once a week or twice a week basis. Sometimes 3 times we've been to play on Thursday night, mainly Monday, Thursday, and Sunday, and sometimes Saturday. We have pushed this flag thing. Nobody's burning the flag. Nobody desecrating the flag. Nobody doing none of this. We're talking about racial injustice. And that's what we should look at it. The collective bargain agency has to get involved. That's when things get more concrete. And all the controversy will come up and all the questions can be asked. But at the moment, when the football game begins and the guys take the field, the national anthem has not been played, play the national anthem, you have to stand. I think a couple of owners, or maybe one owner, said he would pay the fine if they get fined. Is there some type of punishment for the guys that stay in the locker room? Are they going to mention these people that stayed in the locker room and came out later? There's so much there. But again, it's a new era of control. It's all about, again, control. So we control African-American behavior. They always have and always will. We are the ones that basically in controversy all the time because, again, we are a byproduct of white supremacy. We are a byproduct. And we have to understand that. We're always going to be something that involved us. We are the topic at all given times in race relations and racism. Like I said before, so many clouds over racism. And these clouds are white. These are white clouds. And they're going to keep this. They have nothing else to do to make sure they control you, make sure you keep you on the track they want to keep you on. And sports is one of the things they do, basically. I just hope that we find another platform, maybe, or pursue this platform in such a way that the owners agree, find another way to do this, a better way to do it, and become more effective. See, doing something is not effective, it's something different. So if they will boycott you, not can I get a job, things they're going to do. Like I said before, they basically still own you because they're in charge. That's why they call themselves the owners. You just the players in their playbook. That's all you are. They don't want you to ever become an owner. They're not going to let you in. We have to understand that. So again, if I end with this, I tell you that the new policy is when you watch a football game starting September or starting August, just watch this conversation come up. This is going to be probably the larger conversation during the football game and before the football game. See who's in the locker room, who came out, and what their posture is, their hand over their heart, where they took their helmets off or cap off, or where they held their fist up, again, where they Some of them sing, some don't sing, some close their eyes. So look at the posture and the behavior, especially the physical behavior, when this happens. But again, there's going to be more controversy behind this. I'm going to end with one thing. The President of the United States said they shouldn't even be in the country. This is how blatant he made it. Basically, they shouldn't even be in the country. This guy is something different. They should not be in the country. Stand for the national anthem, do this and do that. Or, he said basically leave the country. You don't need to even be here. This is what this guy said. So we got an authoritarian president, mainly trying to be a dictator. Stupid as he can be. But like I say, he's a white supremacist. And like I say, he had no business even putting his mouth into it. But he wants to put his mouth in everything that involved black people. It's just his thing. This is way of doing business with him. He makes sure he do business with you and makes sure it's negative. Like I said before, 90% of the news on you supposed to be negative. 90%. Only 10% positive news on you. Just 10%. 90% has got to be negative. Back to you, Bonson.
Emmanuel, before we go from this particular issue, I would like for you to respond to the scenario of when we talk about the institution of the NFL, National Football League, we are led to believe that it's a team concept. You have different sectors from the owners to the players. They come together and make this concept called the NFL, National Football League. Now, if I heard you correctly, you said that the owners got together among themselves and they did not participate in no form of collective bargaining. They just made a law and said this is what it's going to be. Now, do you think, where's the team concept come in when it comes to making policies that may be one-sided? Where's the team aspect comes into play? I'm missing that part.
Well, unions is there just as a byproduct like other unions are. The money, the finance, all the money comes from, like, again, from the owners. It don't come from collective bargaining. They're just trying to set rules up to make things better for the players. As far as health issues, as far as insurance concern. So that's what that's all about. The whole thing is about winning. Putting a product on the field that's very viable and productive. So there's no team thing as far as that concerned. That's why you have two different organizations. You got the NFL owners, and of course you got the collective bargaining that negotiate salaries, negotiate pension funds, and this type of thing. So there is no team concept for what they're concerned. They're opposite. That's why you have what you have. You got a union, collective bargaining agreement. That's what they do. They bargain collectively to make sure certain things happen. And bargain all the rules. They just didn't bring them in. They made the rules on themselves because it affects their bottom line. If you affect their bottom line as far as TV, as far as advertising, all this is their bottom line. As far as ticket purchasing, this is their bottom line. They're there to make a profit. And they want to make sure they maximize their profit. It's all about the money.
Okay, Emmanuel, talking about the cloud of racism, let's continue down this path. Recently this week, there was a National Basketball Association player that plays for Milwaukee Bucks basketball team. He was attacked by a local police officer with a taser. Now, what does that say to the society? We have professional athletes openly being disrespected and being terrorized by their local police officers. Can you talk about that scenario? What really took place during that scenario, and what can we learn from this?
Well, what I've gathered, he parked his car, I guess, on the lines of the handicap. Before it was a handicap parking there. Some lines that you don't park, basically. I think he parked his car across those lines. So we're talking about a ticket, basically. And most tickets in most states, cities, are $250. With only tickets, some of them should have been wrote just a ticket. put the ticket on his car and do something else. They want a compensation. They look not as a police officer. They look for compensation when it involves a black person. They look for this. Always in their handbook. But this is what they do. They see a guy 6'5", 6'6", African American, nice car. They want to start some controversy quick as they can. Young man came out and, okay, the black said for ticket violation only. And all of a sudden they start saying things, back up, do this, do that. He said, let's give him a ticket and I can go on. They didn't want that. They want a compensation. When the police officer called for a taser. A taser for what? He wasn't doing anything, just standing there. But again, 6'5", over 200 pounds, you very intimidating. And that's what they did. But the mayor came out and said the police department was wrong. Chief police said the same thing.
Okay, we having a little difficulty. We want to give Mr. John a chance to catch his breath. Stay with us. We are at Missing Pages of History. We are talking about the clouds of racism, different incidents that have been going on this past week. And later on, we'd like to hear some of your views and some of your comments on some of your discussion. Are you back with us, Mr. Joyner? Emmanuel. Okay, we can still let him get himself together. How you get himself together? While you get yourself together, what we're going to do, we're going to take one caller. Caller, we're going to bring you in right now, caller. We can bring in caller 3330, caller 330. Based upon what you have heard so far, we are discussing the clouds of racism. We are discussing the new policy on dealing with the national anthem. What are your thoughts on that, caller? 3330.
Well, I am going to speak to the institutional ineptitude of the NFL's players union because, first and foremost, if the players union really had any clout and was better organized and better structured, the owners would never even had this opportunity to even come up with this rule, which they did through a strange mean anyway. Because when, upon further research, when they did this agreement, basically, it wasn't even a formal meeting. It was kind of an impromptu meeting. Where the owners were in the room, they basically were asking off the record, so to speak, would anybody have any issue with it? And a good number of them did vote, but there were a number that abstained as well. So that's one interesting development. And speaking on the players.
Call it for clarity, you said the players were asked if any of them have any issues by the owners. Now, what issues were they talking about?
The owners were asked in regards to the informal vote that went on. The owners were asked, would there be any concerns regarding it? And a good portion did say that they would be fine with it, but there were a number that abstained. So that's something that people have to take note of as well, because there can be compliance through complicity. But not saying anything does not mean that that's necessarily a no.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't necessarily say anything.
Okay, calling your response to the national basketball player for Milwaukee in the tasing. You have a response to that incident?
Well, it seems to be a continuing trend, unfortunately, that until those who make the laws really are serious about examining it, they're going to continue to try to pacify the situation as long as it happens to certain segments of society. Until it hits Wall Street, apparently it's just not an issue.
Okay, caller, we thank you. We're going to put you on hold. Thank you for your support in Missing Pages of History. You can bring me Emmanuel back. Emmanuel, are you back? How are you doing?
Yeah, doing pretty good.
Okay, we're back with Emmanuel. Okay, man, you had a, when I listen audience, they gave their views on the two issues. I think you was in a mix of talking about the issue of with the basketball player in Milwaukee and the tasing by the police officer. Will you continue?
He's absolutely correct. Yeah, but like I said again, the percentage wise, 90% police officers, they try to create controversy. Everybody's calling you a name, but then you keep your hands out your pocket. They said things to you to intimidate you to a certain degree. And again, excuse to administer bodily harm to you or resist arrest to try to get a charge. But again, we got to arrest so many people regardless. They have a quota. And that's what happened there. The young man on the file suit, and he should file suit against the police department. He should. And I'm glad we need to start doing this more and more and more. Once you do this, once they start spending money from their budget, they don't like to do this very much. But like I say, this is something that should never have happened. It was simply a ticket, just a simple ticket parking in a handicapped spot, and you get a ticket, you get a fine. It's very simple, and you walk away. You give a ticket and you go. But again, when you approach your automobile, they want a conversation with you. But you don't have to give me the ticket and let me go, please. They don't want that. They want controversy. They want it all. But the officers of the police want controversy.
Emmanuel, the problem is, how do you get around it? You go out every day, you do the right thing, and they constantly provoking you. What do you do? What happens if you're in that situation? What would you tell your son? What would you tell your uncle? What would you tell even your grandmother now? They're stopping elderly woman, 90 years old, and doing the same thing to her. What do you tell them?
Well, they got that silent handbook. That silent handbook is what they use a lot. It's going to be there. The unwritten rules are there. They're rules. But they're unwritten to you. You can't change a person's attitude. You cannot change it. You cannot change inequality. Very difficult. You cannot make no money off it. You can't make this whole thing is about capitalism. You can't make money off you don't arrest somebody. You got to make some money through that money tree. Through the judge, through the probation officer, police got to get paid. Everybody got to get paid. And they got to find a way to pay it. And if you
so help your mind back, huh?
Yeah, that's what they do. We like to, again, we're 70% of the people in the courtroom, and you're 12% of the population. Why are you in the courtroom so much? I mean, for what? And you got guys doing everything up under the sun. I mean, fraud, embezzlement, everything up under the sun. White-collar crime is 90% of the crime, a real crime. How many get prosecuted? About 10% out of 90%. It's a different ballgame, and we're in the game only for profit. The clouds of racism, it comes in many forms. It had many line items. Many line items. Let's take two instances. Starbucks. Young men walk in, sat at the table for about 2-3 minutes, they call the police. For what reason? People coming with unfold their computers. I mean, doing all kind of stuff. Ain't bought nothing yet. And nothing is said. Wi-Fi. You come and do the same thing there for his problem. We are looked at totally different. Totally different. Again, 90% negative. Only 10% positive.
Irania, is this an indication of the old saying, the more things change, the more they remain the same? Are we looking at another set of ways, or they saying they don't want African people in this country coming to their businesses?
Well, not that so much, because you need a profit margin. You want to make sure you keep bringing your money to them. But again, at their behavior, you will have to behave a certain way. their thing to make sure they get your money. If you walk into a place, walk around this store, they basically followed you because you're not buying anything off them right away. They see you in a store like Nordstrom's or a Tiffany or a different type of high-end store, they're watching you. Who are you? Trying to identify you. That's the whole key. Find out who you are. Are you going to spend money? How much money do you want to spend? We're here just to spend money, basically.
Okay, let's just continue.
Okay.
Let's just continue down this road of the cloud of racism. Speak to the issue, how does this theme, the cloud of racism, relates to Stacey Adams is running for the state governor in Georgia under the Democratic Party? Give our listening audience an update on what's happening with that. And from my understanding, the indication seems that she's doing pretty well in terms of possibly being elected a candidate to run for the state governor. Why is that of significance, Emmanuel?
Well, Stacey Abrams will become the first black female to earn, I might say, the nomination for the Democratic Party and the governor of Georgia. This will be so significant. Right now, she's got 76% of the vote of the Democratic vote. Run against two Republicans. One guy is a gun rights guy. Against immigration. Against everything. I think she has the ear of the people of Georgia. And Stacey Abrams is well-liked, very, very smart, very good political views. She's knowing what she's running on. And again, I believe that she's going to become the first female black governor of a state, a southern state since Reconstruction.
Now, for this audience, Emmanuel, can you give us a brief background? Who is Stacey Abrams?
Well, from what I know about her, she was a legislator, mainly, but she has been there quite some time. Activist. An Obama student, you might say, an Obama student. Always been active in politics. Women's rights. A Clinton supporter, totally. A lady that, like I said, was good. Real, real smart politician. And again, she feeds off of the economic values in America. Trump is one of her nemesis, of course. They're going to try to bring that stuff on her that's not even true or half truths, like most Republicans do. She takes care of her family. I think she's the family money tree at the moment. She's been doing it for quite some time. So she's a very lot of intellect in politics. And she's got a good support base. And she's got money coming in, which is a great thing. Her team is off the chain. She has a very good team of politicians working with her. And I think she got the voice of the people of Georgia. To get 76%, that's outstanding. That's almost a sure that she's going to be the Democratic candidate versus two Republicans running for governor also. I think the guys are running are lieutenant governor and I forgot what the other guy is, state's attorney or something. That's who she's running up against. But she's running up against two real, real haters, two real, real Republicans who are staunch in their beliefs and who are very racist in their beliefs. That's who she's running up against.
Okay, listen to Emmanuel. He's a historian, an analyst, and a contributor in Missing Pages of History. We are discussing today's theme, which is the cloud of racism. As we recently spoke to the issue of the NFL new policy on the national anthem, to the stunning of a NBA basketball player out of Milwaukee, to Stacey Abrams, running for state governor. These are some of the issues that are currently going on. He's given his perspective on it. And we will say to you, if you have any comments, any questions, we have a few minutes left. Feel free. Please hit 1, and we acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So at this point in time, Emmanuel, before we go on that station break, we would like for you to touch a little bit on the so-called immigration law that recently took place and how they divide families at the border. So what's happening with this immigration law, and what do you think of how they're taking the children, mothers and fathers, forcing them back into Mexico but keeping the children here in the United States? That seems very mean-spirited. What do you make of this, Emmanuel?
Yeah, this is something different. Has a lot of twists to it. This is nothing new. They separated slaves. That started a long time ago. Separating families is part of the soul to the next plantation or to the next state. So your family, split your families up. So this is not nothing new. And again, we're immigrants also, with slave immigrants, a little bit different, because we came in chains. So family don't make no difference. Family is not family. This is what they do. I think in the state of Florida, they did the Haitians the same way. They split them up. They had camps and stuff for them. So splitting up families is nothing new. This is something awful. I think the lowest or the youngest child, so forth, than 52 weeks old, separated from their family. 52 weeks old. At the moment, they have lost 1,500 children. Don't know where they are. They have no idea where these children are. These kids are 2 and 3 years old, 5 years old, suffering from their family, going into foster, you might say foster homes. I call them foster projects. Never meet their family again. This is something different. I've never in my life thought this ever would happen. You separate families. But again, we got separated, and we have to watch out for certain things back in the day. I never forget that my parents told me to make sure we knew our family, because you could be marrying your cousin, you could be marrying somewhere else because of separation of families back in the day, to the next plantation, or the next plantation, 10, 20 miles away. Because of separation. That's why a lot of African American families today, separation is not a big thing. Except they call it, more hypothetically, call it divorce. But like I say, with no divorce involved, it was just total separation. Your name got changed and everything. So a lot of names got changed from John to Johnson, from William to William's son. So these names got changed because of the division of families for profit, again, slavery. So separation of families, this is nothing new. been on the books for decades. We were the first ones to get involved in separation because of slavery. So again, the ills of slavery had a lot of tentacles to it. A lot. A lot of line items that are very negative. And like I said, very unfavorable. But again, they try to make it right. Try to make a wrong right. You know you're wrong. Separating a 52-week-old child from their parents by never seeing them again. Who their parents are. This is a big adoption agency, basically. And I think our attorney general, he said, that's the law. If you come here, and you come here basically not within the law, what the law has agreed to, where you have to come, and they're going to separate the family. They're going to take the kids. They're going to lock up the parents and take the children. What kind of burden is that going to be when a child is sick? You know, when the child is on medication? You have all these ramifications they're not even considering. It doesn't bother them. I have no idea what's going on here with this. But like I said, the big thing is that you lost 1,500 kids, have no idea who they belong to. Who really done lost them? They're totally lost. The immigration law, like I say, Obama had it right and was trying to make it even better. And this guy is saying no. No, regardless, under no circumstances, we're going to do this. Under no circumstances. There is no outlet. There is no door to make this right. The thing is cut and dry. Cut and dry, basically. We're going to take your children, separate you. Send you back to Mexico. We're going to keep the children. This is what's going to happen. I've never seen the institution of immigrants treated this way. And the DOJ, the DOJ calls them illegal aliens. Illegal aliens. Where do they get these names from? Donald Trump calls them animals. Animals. Not even people, he said. They are animals. They're rapists. They're murderers. This is who they are. This is
Emmanuel.
Yeah.
We're going to a station break, but listening to you, you made me think about one of the questions the third world used to always ask, and they used to always ask the world, "Do you remember the days of slavery?" So on that note, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, audience, we're going to do the continuation of today's Capitalists Were Born in Slavery, and we're going to get a report on what's happening with MPH with Susie, and then we'll close out with a summary. So those will be our items when we return back. Don't you go nowhere. This is Missing Pages of History.
Enough is enough for the sergeant.
We'd like to welcome you back to Missing Pages of History. Our theme today is the cloud of racism. Prior before our commercial break, we've been discussing with Emmanuel different issues that are affecting our community as relates to our theme, the cloud of racism. What we want to do right now is to make our transition to the continuation of a segment that we started called Today's Capitalism Was Born in Slavery. You know, many times in order to understand the present, you must go back to the past. You must go back to the past to understand what is about the past to help shape and help develop the present realities that we are dealing with today. Sometimes to get a proper understanding or value on a people or on institutions or on discoveries, we need to understand how it came to be and what contributed to it. So at this point in time, we can bring Emmanuel back, and he can continue his series on Today's Capitalism Was Born in Slavery, dealing with the segment of slavery became central to Industrial Revolution. Emmanuel, welcome back. We'll turn the mic over, and the mic is yours.
Thank you. Well, basically, give me a little history. That thing that we need to know, we can identify while we, what we're in today, present. We, in modern capitalism, we must develop a new appreciation for the centrality of slavery. That was the central part of the United States and elsewhere. Modern capitalism and how it emerged in the 1800s. 1 million Americans at that particular time within slavery. And we grew cotton. Raw cotton was the most important export of the United States. At the center of American financial flow and emerging, you might say, business practices. And, of course, our first modern manufacturing industry. As a fugitive, I'll never forget, in history class, talked about John Brown, who was a fugitive slave. And what he said was, if I remember this correctly, when the price of cotton rises, English market, I mean the European market, the poor slaves will immediately feel the effects because they are driven harder, longer hours, and the whip is being used more constantly. And the whip is being used more constantly. So the cotton fields, if you're familiar with it, some of us are at a certain age. You start in the morning at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and you work until 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Prior to that particular time, it was basically 8 o'clock to about 4 or 5 o'clock. But again, things changed. And the slaves felt the effects because, again, the price of cotton rose in the English market. It became the key to the United States economy. And what it did, it moved the center of the world economy, and the transformation took place. It became globally interconnected. So now all of a sudden we got Industrial Revolution, and cotton and slavery is doing that. So it ain't about no farmers. It's about slaves. Not about the Indians. It's about slaves. We built this country, basically. We built this country. social relations became a big part of the world. But slaves are not part of the social relationship. So what happened was certain parts of the world became much richer than other parts of the world. That's why you have what you have today, the rich nations and the poor nations. Slavery was a huge part of that. And, of course, the cotton industry was the most important part of that. So what happened was that when the fiber got transformed, you might say the cotton got transformed into yarn and cloth, then of course industrial capitalism began right away. And that's similar to us today. Clothing. Clothing, like I said, became the most important part of our economy during the 18th and 19th century. So what it did, it connected us with other countries like India, Europe wasn't connected as much. Tasting wasn't there. But this was the big connection. Now, where are we going to get all this cotton from? Well, African slaves and land-grabbing settlers, who they call farmers. They were land-grabbing settlers that we call farmers. And again, we connected over vast distances. That didn't become a problem anymore. So we can create what they call an empire of cotton. And again, this created modern capitalism. Our modern world right now originates in the cotton factories. My father worked in the cotton factory, textile mill. This is what it was all about. Nothing else. This is where the money was. There was nothing else out there that could explode an economy like cotton. So what happened was that it became more like global capitalism. Now, we didn't move from territorial or type capitalism to global. And again, it unfolded over several centuries. So all of a sudden, cotton. See, to understand slavery more, we need to analyze the relative strength of social and political structures in place. So in India, the Ottoman Empire, see, what you need to understand is capitalism's relationship to slavery. That's what I'm trying to tell you now. We need to see the control of the cultivators in Africa over the land and the labor. The whole thing is about land and labor. And of course, transformation into India. So, when you look at the institutional structures of capitalism, we look at it in Britain, and we look at Egypt. Identify these countries, continents, with cotton, with cloth, basically. So again, I want to ensure that the emerging field and global history, we're talking about slavery and we're talking about cotton. They weren't worried about academic discipline. As far as slaves concerned, we weren't a part of that. We're not a part of that today, basically, of academic discipline. The thing is about how do we make profit? how do we grow capitalism? See, most of the our history has been framed with the borders of modern states. Each state here has a product that they emphasize. And this is what you deal with in that particular state. You try to become a part of that, what they introduce in that particular state. As a historian, I try to think beyond the framework, beyond the global scope, beyond the regional scope. And again, how do we transform the world 10th century with cotton and slavery? The two go hand in hand. But if you look at the great divergence in the countries of China, Europe, and the U.S. of A., and the making of the world, the modern world economy, and I always said, who were the workers of the world? Slaves. Slaves were the workers of the world. So stop playing yourself short. The terminology they use on you is being lazy. We know who's lazy. We know who's been lazy. Because again, if you're not one lazy, you wouldn't need no slaves. So let's take and transform that back and throw that back at them at all given times. So we were global labor history. We are African-American slaves. We are the economics of the U.S. of A. It's a national question sometimes. How do you manage these slaves? It became a manager of capitalism. So you got a group of people that you know you're not going to teach academic-wise. They're only there for labor. So your thing is become managers. I call it managerial slave capitalism. Organized capitalism. It got organized. It got organized in different layers. And some of the layers were foreman, a lead person, owner. These that you will never become. You're not part of the organized capitalism or managerial capitalism. You're just a laborer. You're just a slave, basically. This made the word a little bit, upscale the word from slave to labor. Then the sprouts of capitalism sprouted out in China, doing the same thing, basically. Cheap labor, which they do now. And again, China, looking at the global system, cheap labor from their jurisdiction. And that's why we have what we have today. The TPP, the trade organizations, because people looking for cheap labor. We started it. So, what I'm telling you is that slavery became central to the Industrial Revolution. And as I apply the global perspective, we got to develop a new appreciation for the centrality of slavery in the United States. We have to talk about it because we the one did this. People are taking credit for something that they didn't do. They're taking credit for it. They developed this and discovered this and did this. No. we have to show appreciation for the centrality of slavery, because we're the central part of our economic development that made the United States of America and modern capitalism. So again, we have eventually almost overcome what happened in the 17th, 18th, and 19th century. We're gradually overcoming it. We understand that. We have to understand that. We're a huge part of the Atlantic trade slave. That's where we came from. We are a commodity. And they still treat us as a commodity now. That's why we have the tribulations we have today. For they're concerned, you are still a commodity. You're a slave commodity. So don't get away from that. And that's expanding through racism, through the clouds of racism. South Asian countries, same thing. They copied what the U.S. already copied. The slave trade, but the Europeans covered the slave trade. So that's a motivation for some people in the Asian countries. To enter the cotton manufacturing industry, and which has flourished and flourishing now all over the world, especially in Asian countries. Cotton is grown almost everywhere. And it's going to be except that's a new thing for the millennia. It's going to be cotton, especially in South Asian countries. That is a new labor market, basically. And that's why we trade with 12 countries because of the cheap labor. We manage the labor now. We manage the product. So it's a different ball. It comes here, it's already made. We're more like a distributor now. So we went all the way from the slave trade all the way now to managing the economy that has been already been instilled through the cotton manufacturing industry, which is now flourishing in other countries. So as I end this, for the first 80 years of modern industry, the only significant quantity of raw cotton entering European markets were produced by slaves. The first 80 years, that's a long time, and we have to understand we drew on this slave-grown cotton from the West Indies to Brazil, and especially in the United States, for 80 years, 80 years of modern industry, the only significant quantities of raw cotton in the European markets were produced by slaves. So don't play yourself short. There's some history that you need to know. And you can look at it today. You see what the cotton has done. As you go to the malls, to the Walmart, to the Targets, all you see is cotton, 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 cotton. And we're the innovators of that. It would never have been the past. If you depend on a white person to pick cotton, to work in the cotton fields, don't get any academics at all, make sure that you discipline them for academics, and you move yourself into the managerial area to manage. And that's what they do today. They just manage. You're still doing the work, the labor. Not as much, but now they turned it over to the Asian countries, basically. Where cheap labor, again, where it all got started here, and it got transformed into, again, the TPP countries, several of those countries now. Cheap labor, very cheap labor. 12 hours a day, same as we used to do 12 hours, sometimes 16 hours a day. And from children in India to China, Indonesia, this is what's going on, people. Slavery is still here. But again, the resources have changed based to Asians. Back to you, host.
Thank you for that presentation, Emmanuel. We will continue this segment dealing with today's capitalism of born in slavery in our next upcoming shows. Right now, we're going to take a quick station break. When we come back, we're bringing Susie, going to give us some update on what's going on with MPH. Then we'll come back with Emmanuel Final Thoughts for today. You are listening to Missing Pages of History.
Hello. Hi. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our quarterly raffle fundraiser drawing coming up on Saturday, June the 6th at 1 o'clock, which will be held on the www.blogtalkradio.com, Missing Pages of History, Inc. You need not be present to win. You can listen at 818-337-0016. Also, we have our upcoming MPH TV show, which will be starting September the 12th. It's a weekly program, and it's on Comcast Channel 95 and Fios Channel 36, and we welcome all call-ins. Also, it's a continuation of our MPH T-shirts, cap drive. And you can place your orders by contacting one of the MPH members, or either you can go to our website, www.mphinc.org. And also, as a reminder, we have our biweekly MPH radio program, which is on Saturdays at 1 o'clock. p.m., and our next program will be June the 9th. And we welcome you to listen in and also to express your opinions. And I'd like to thank you for supporting MPH.
And, Susan, I think just one little quick corrections. I think our coming rapper is June the 2nd and not the 6th. We thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
All right, audience, June the 2nd. And like always, not only do we need your support, but we are asking you to come help be an MPH so we can help make our communities better. So we need you. Come and join us. You know how to get in touch with us. Any feedback concerning our radio shows, please feel free to email us at listenpagehistory1@yahoo.com. Emmanuel, are there any things you want to say in general about the future of MPH before you make your closing summary for the day?
Yeah, on the stay tuned. We're going to do a half an hour segment almost each show on history, on African American history, things that we should know, things we need to get a grasp of to see what about when the conditions are we in today, or you might say status quo. Keep our Trump swamp, keep that updated, what's going on with him basically, explaining things that don't get explained correctly, get twisted. We're talking about a guy that told over 3,000 lies, so we gotta stay on top of him and what he's lying about. We're talking about a guy that don't even write his Twitters. You can tell when he's writing because they misspell words, and of course when someone else is doing it, you can almost tell that he didn't write them himself. So the Trump Watch, and I call it the Trump Swamp, I will be updating that all given time to breaking news. And we're going to keep you again. We want to make sure that you understand exactly when some come out that's been twisted and not in our favor. We start talking about things like the Waffle House, which is very quietly where four people got killed, and it's quietly been dispelled, basically. It wasn't talked about too much. So, again, you're just a guest in America, I call it. We're just guests. We're slaves from the beginning. Now we're just guests here. We're just guests.
Okay, man, you'll find a summarization for today's program, The Cloud of Racism. You'll find the thoughts.
Well, I've been doing a lot of stuff on racism during the summer. My TV show will probably consist of that. That's the most talked about thing at the moment because we have certain instances where things happen that involve the race card. Racism. Again, things that we cannot do are things they question all the time when we do them. Again, negative news follows us 90% of the time. We want to reverse that trend. We're going to do positive news 90% of the time and 10% negative news. We want to reverse that trend. But these things are out there to make sure you report 90% negative news on African Americans. You saw how they did our president, former President Obama. Negative news, 90% of the time. So these kind of things we want to try to rectify as much as possible. Make yourself worthwhile. To recap some of the things today, I'm glad that the young man in Milwaukee, the basketball player, is suing the police department. That should be done. And we need more suitcases to come up like this to get identified so we know exactly, so we know the law. Don't be afraid of the law. You got to go and actually test the law. And we'll get tested for the law. When it comes to us, it's going to be a certain way. They instill the law and the way they apply the law. Application of the law don't mean the same for us. It's a different type of law applied. And again, you got 90% of the judges, most of them are racist. So you got to deal with this. And they try to pick black judges who are close to almost like them to a certain extent. So we ought to watch the black judges that you chose. And make sure to vote. Vote can change everything. make sure when you look at the signs on the lawn of different places, look that person up and see if he's a Republican or he's a Democrat or independent. See what party he belongs to. Because they're not putting their R or their D's or I's on the signs anymore. They're being slick again. Of course, you got gerrymandering out here also at all given times. So be careful about the local. Vote locally to get your voice heard. But I'm just so happy that we are looking at things more closely now, and we have to do that and get more responsible for our vote. Make sure you learn something about the person that you're voting for as much as possible.
And on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for their participation and allowing us to come to our homes and to speak to you today on the theme, the cloud of racism. We'd like to remind you again to find out more about MPH, please check out our website at www.mphinc.org. You can see our goals, our objectives, our aspirations, and the nature of the work that we are pursuing to help improve our communities. And we need your help, your support, your participation. Come and join us. But more importantly, remember, history is a map that can direct and guide our future behaviors and actions. And if we're going to achieve success, we need to write our story. We need our history. So we encourage you to join us so we can continue to fill in our missing pages of history. We see you in 2 weeks. This has been Missing Pages of History.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. The Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Over me. We talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more country. Baptized birth into Richmond, where the ghosts of childhood haunt me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. My brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. You said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and you was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason, it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.